I hope I'm never ever satisfied. I'm probably not. I always think about how could I have done it better? How could I have done it faster? Where's the next challenge? And right now I'm most depressed by the fact that I don't know what I'm going to do next year. I don't know what the goal is. I don't know what that is. I hate that. I love to know what's the next goal to prepare for.
Welcome to the Trailhead once again of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests that teach us about trail running, tell us some good stories, inspire us, and hopefully make us better runners and maybe even better human beings.
And if you stay along on the ride in the next 60 minutes with David Horton, you are guaranteed to become a better runner and human. I just love this conversation. Scott, it's hard to get the right nutrition every day when you need it, but Athletic Greens has solved it. Every single thing you need, bioavailable for your body in an easy-to-use, great-tasting green drink.
With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, and whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens.
Hey, it costs less than $3 a day, and you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than that cold brew habit you might have. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews.
It's lifestyle-friendly, too. Whether you're eating keto or paleo or vegan, dairy-free or gluten-free, it works for all of those diets.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and your immune system with this convenient daily nutrition.
And here is what Athletic Greens is going to do for us. They're giving you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you need to do is go to athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And Chrissy Mail is here too.
Chrissy, tell us who you brought with you. You have a fun friend with us.
She has a plus one with her on this one.
I brought a plus one. And what an awesome plus one I got to bring. David Horton, you were one of the first people I met in this sport. I was just getting my bearings in what trail and ultra running was way back in 2001. So we're talking 20 years on that I have known our guest today. David Horton lives in Lynchburg, Virginia. He's a professor at Liberty University. And I'm going to go so far as use the word legend on this man. And I know it's just going to make his head go big, but I love this man. He's taught me a lot. He's taught a lot of people. And the words that came to mind when I was thinking of why he's a legend is for his duration, his contribution, his competition, and his ability to draw people into the sport. So Horton, I'm so glad. And I am not as maybe professional with Horton as others prefer that I be, but I call him Horton with a very endearing term. And I thought we'd kick off with the Hellgate 100K. That was an event that I got to participate in 2007, and it just happened this weekend. So I know you're excited and probably still a little buzzing from race production. Horton, where are you at right now? How did that go?
Trying to recover. Directing a race is a lot harder than running a race. And I call Chrissy Sissy Girl. And Sissy Girl knows that. Running a race is easy. Directing a race is hard. It is really hard. It takes a lot, and it takes a lot out of you. And it takes longer to recover from directing a race than running a race, unless you do one of the real, real long ones.
Tell us a little bit about Hellgate 100. I don't know a whole lot about it. I've heard of it, but I don't know a whole lot about it. What makes Hellgate unique?
Besides the name.
Right.
Hellgate 100K. Lots of people ask me, they say, hey, you teach at a Christian university, don't you? Why would you call something Hellgate? Well, it starts at Hellgate Trailhead next to Big Hellgate Creek. And then there's a few other little things that make it sort of interesting, sort of fun facts. It starts at 12:01 a.m. And there's a very real reason for starting at 12:01 a.m. And the actual length of 100K is supposed to be 62.2 miles. Well, the actual length, and it wasn't planned, turns out to be, and one guy showed me his watch on Saturday, and he said 66.6. So that's hell. And that was the runner who placed third. He said his course, and it showed his watch. That's what it showed. So it really is 66.6. You know, it's conducted the second week of December, second weekend of December, and historically we have some unique weather there, and we have some unique problems there as well. But 18-hour time limit, 13,000 feet of gain.
I have one of those unique problems. I froze my corneas at the Hellgate 100K in 2007. I was blind. Like, I could not drive a car after finishing the Hellgate 100K. There's some legit stuff.
Wait. You can actually do that? I thought that was kind of like a metaphor. You can freeze your corneas?
That's what the eye doctor thought once I got home and got them checked, because that was a pretty scary experience to lose your vision for 24 hours. But I was on course record pace and I finished anyways.
Blind?
It was the wind chill. I was like looking through foggy goggles, you know, your ski goggles fog up. That's what the visual was like. Creates some really amazing hallucinations, turns out, when you can't see and your brain's a little tired from being up running since midnight. But yeah, with the wind, and I think we were, if I remember right, it was like 14 degrees, but in the single digits for with the wind chill factor in terms of temperature. So it was a unique year. Definitely the most clothes I've ever worn running.
David, why does it start at 12:01? You must have a reason.
Yes. It starts at 12:01 because if you say midnight, then is that midnight Friday night or midnight Saturday night? But 12:01 on December 11th is Saturday. So everyone knows the starting time. It's on Saturday. You don't have to ask if you think about the time. And also started at that time so that it's an 18-hour time limit. 18 hours will put you at 6 p.m. on Saturday night so that basically 90% of the runners can finish before dark on the second night.
Very good. There's usually some logistics and reasons behind them. It's nice to know.
18-hour time limit. So is it a fairly easy course or is it a technical course? Oh, he's laughing at me. Okay. It's not easy. Tell us a little bit about the terrain, David.
Well, again, 13,000 feet of gain. It's a point-to-point race. That is after the leaves have fallen and we do not blow the trails off. So the leaves can be anywhere from 4 inches, 5 inches to a foot and a half deep.
Wow.
And we have a few rocks in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So it's rather rocky, and basically people are going into the first night. You can't get any sleep on Friday night, maybe 30 minutes. So you're going in sleep deprived when you start the race. And then, again, you're starting at 12:01. Your worst time physically where you function worst is probably between midnight and daylight, and that's when you're starting. So that makes it difficult on the runners, but interesting to see.
So does everybody come away with a sprained ankle?
A few. We have award, the Stupid Award, as well as the Best Blood Award. And we always give out the Best Blood because someone always earns it.
I think you do that at all your races, right, Horton? The Best Blood?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Now I asked a question to David before we started to give him a chance to think about the answer, but he didn't even need to think about it. He started to answer, but I said, whoa, stop. Save it for the podcast. I wanted to know, because he is an OG.
OG.
When you look back at runners, do you think that we are tougher now or tougher then? Where have we evolved as a sport? Have we sissied up a little bit, or have we become tougher?
Overall, I think the vast majority of runners are more sissified now. Runners expect more now. They want more now. But there are some that don't want that, don't want more. But overall, runners are just faster now. Runners are not afraid of challenging course records. They're not afraid of running fast. And the number that we're getting into the ultra running field now is just huge. The fastest runners used to not go into ultras. And the fastest runners graduating from high school and college are going into ultra running now. It's a legit profession. It's not viewed as something as weird. It used to be viewed as something as weird, strange. Still a lot of people think that, but not so many. So we're getting really fast people in. And I think we're also getting some really soft, sissy people in. But runners are getting faster and faster.
I resemble that comment. Is sissy a compliment or is sissy a negative?
That is correct. Sissy is a compliment. Sissy is a put down. Sissy girl is not a sissy. Sissy girl is tough. She is tough physically. She is tough mentally. And she's as tough as any woman I know.
David, Don called you an OG, and I think you said you were questioning what an OG is.
Yeah, what is that?
What is an OG, Don?
Oh, God.
No, not at all. I'm going to pass it over to Chrissy because she's claimed OG, and so you give us the definition, Chrissy.
I did the same thing Horton did when somebody called me an OG. What am I? It stands for original gangster.
Old girl.
But no, you Horton. Oh. It's not old girl. It is original gangster. So original. You've been around for the long haul. You're of the original group. And I think that fits. You're an OG, Horton.
It's a compliment.
Okay.
It is a compliment.
It's not a questionable compliment.
Ooh.
My question around that is, tell us about how you got started in trail running.
Ed Air started Running Times. And in 1977, which is before many... Chrissy girl, when were you born?
77.
I saw Running Times magazine, and it showed a picture of these runners running across rocks. And it was the JFK 50. And I thought, wow, that is so cool. That is so neat. I can't believe they have a race that's 50 miles in length. I thought, I think that's what I will run. So in 1979, I went up and ran the JFK 50, and I met my first ultra runner at the race. I'd never seen one. I'd never talked to one. And that was my first race. And I finished 24th in 7:53. So,
wow.
That's a fast time.
Yeah.
It's okay.
What made you think you could run 50 miles? You'd never even met an ultra runner. One of the reasons I thought I could finish one is they were all around me and they looked like normal humans. I thought, well, if they have a shot, maybe I have a shot. But you hadn't even seen one. What made you think you could run 50 miles?
I don't know. If they could do it, I could do it. I just thought that. I thought if they can do it, I can do it. And not a real logical reason. But I'd run a few marathons and I wasn't too tired at the end, a little bit, but not too tired. So I thought, well, here's something else. Here's something new. And so that's where it all started. Back when I started, there wasn't that many ultra runners around. And it was viewed as a very weird, real, crazy sport. I'll never forget, I ran that first 100-miler, and I finished, 10th, in 10th place in Old Dominion 100-miler. And then I went back a couple of years later and ran and won it. And I came back and called the local newspaper and told them that I'd finished the 100-miler and I'd won. They said, oh, no, that's okay. We don't write anything about you because we wrote about you a couple of years ago. Yeah, it's just a crazy thing, It wasn't a true sporting event. And that's the difference now is in times past, it was viewed as strange, weird, eccentric, crazy. Of course, I've done many crazy things, as people would call it. But back then, there was really no recognition that it's a legit sport. It is now, for sure.
Give us an idea. If you go out to the grocery store and you see somebody that is getting some snacks to go on a trail run, you can almost identify them by the uniform they have. Right? They have their trail runner shoes. They may have some gaiters on their shoes. They have a hydration pack. What did a trail runner look like in 1977? Could you identify them? Or did they just have a crazy look in their eyes?
It was a crazy look. I don't know. The way I used to time my runs is I'd look at the clock and wait till it got to an even time, like 8 o'clock. And then I'd start running. And then when I finished, I'd run into the house and look at the clock and see what time was. And that was timing the run. That's why I timed my runs, looking at the clock. Did I have a stopwatch? No one had a stopwatch. There were no stopwatches.
Do you think there's an advantage to that, David? Do you think that there's an advantage to really not having a pacemaker on your arm and not worrying about the time?
For some people it is. Some people it's not. You can use tools to hold you down, hold you back. Like I call all listening devices basically crutches. I've run 113,000 miles and biked probably 50 or 60,000 miles now. I've never ever listened to music as I biked or run. I know there's times I would like it. I know there's times I would enjoy it, but you see a lot more and you hear a lot more if you don't listen to the devices.
It's because all those voices in your head. David, you said you were crazy. Yeah, you have a whole bunch of friends you've been chatting up.
That's true. There's no doubt about that.
David, if you could gift an ultra runner some superpower, whether it's toughness or endurance or just positive attitude, what would you gift an ultra runner with? What's most important for an ultra runner to possess?
There's short ultras and there's long ultras. Long ultras, it would be an iron stomach. Mm-hmm. That you could eat and drink anything. Short ultras, it's basically between the ears, head knowledge, knowing what to do in different circumstances when bad things happen. And bad things happen. Bad things happen on a regular basis in long-distance biking, long-distance running. It's between the heads. Mentally tough, the pit bull philosophy.
I want to go back to those numbers you just threw out, Horton. 113,000 miles running,
yes,
and 50 to 60,000 on the bike. Like, yes. There's so much summarized in those numbers, and I know a little bit of it. One of the things I think is super cool about what I learned about you and even got to participate a little bit with you is you've made an H across the United States. You set the record on the Appalachian Trail in 1991, and then you ran across America in
1995.
And then this is the one I got to be a part of. You set the record on the Pacific Crest Trail in 2005. So those are some of the stats, if you will, about this man that, like, I think verify that legend status I used earlier. There's all these things that keep you coming back. What is it?
Challenges. I'm never satisfied. I fail this summer. Ugh! And failure probably motivates people and motivates me more than anybody else. And I'm my own hardest taskmaster. I finished the Trans Am bike race, which is from Astoria, Oregon to Yorktown, Virginia, which is 4,200 miles, averages 133 miles a day for 32 days. And then that was in 2017. Then this summer I failed. I stopped it after 2,100 miles, 19 days. And, I say this, I hope I never go back, but I know I will. and finishing Barkley, that was in 2002 at age 52.
You were you and Blake Wood were the first finishers of Barkley, correct?
First American finishers. There was a guy from England that had finished it before us, and we were the first American finishers. And that's the hardest thing to finish. That's harder to do. That would be harder to repeat than anything else I've done. And you can see the last 2 years, there's been no finishers at the Barkley. That's hard. Mm-hmm. I've biked across America on roads. I've biked across America on trails. I've run across America on roads. I've run across America on trails. So that's pretty cool to know that I've done it each way, two different ways. Do I want to do it again? Yep. I'd like to do it. Yep. I hope I'm never, ever satisfied. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably not. I always think about how could I have done it better? How could I have done it faster? Where's the next challenge? And right now, I'm most depressed by the fact that I don't know what I'm going to do next year. I don't know what the goal is. I don't know what that is. Mm. I hate that. I love to know what's the next goal to prepare for. And I can't do the short things. The short things are, 25 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles. That's no big deal. I need something harder, longer.
David, where does that come from, that drive?
You have it or you don't have it. Pit bull. He has it. He has it. I'm only afraid of pit bulls because what do? They grab a hole and they don't turn loose. They won't turn loose. I'm afraid of them. The other things, I'm not afraid of them. It's just there. I don't have a lot of drive. A professor told me here at this school, I said, Dr. So-and-so, I have a lot of drive. He said, no. He said, what you have? You're driven. I said, that's it. I am. I'm driven. I have to achieve. I have to have a goal in mind. I want to do something. So it's just there. I'm just driven, which is sort of sad because I'm over the hill. I'm 71. I've had, 9 years ago, I had a 7-way bypass, open heart surgery. 7 years ago, I had a total knee replacement. So my maximum heart rate is lower. My maximum heart rate is about 160. That's like having a lower engine power. And I can't change it. I can't change that. And that's frustrating. I hate that. I hate that I'm not the runner I once. Not the runner. See, I still think as a runner, although I haven't run much in a long, long time.
Once a runner, always a runner.
Yes, that's true.
Let's talk a little bit about that bypass surgery / knee replacement, because there are people out there that have had that or are going to have it, and including all of us potentially on this call. How do you have confidence against your doctors may have said, hey, you know what, you'll never run again, this is it? And I'm sure you probably heard that stuff, and we should follow our doctor's advice. But how did you process this instruction and still come out a pit bull?
Yeah, I went to Mayo Clinic, and the orthopedic doctor there, who had been the orthopedic doctor for the Olympic team, said, your running days are over. And that was a hard thing. That was a tough thing. Mm-hmm. I cried a few tears, and I thought, now what? I've got to have something. I got to do something. I teach in this field about exercise. I direct races. I've got to be moving, otherwise I can't do these things. And I thought, well, I'd always said if I wasn't a runner, I'd be a biker. So I started biking. 9 months later, I did the Tour Divide, which is a bike race from Banff, Canada to Antelope Wells, New Mexico, 2,650 miles. I thought, yep, this is what I can do. And did I know much about the bike? Was I a good biker? Nope. So anyway, it's just there. So I had to find another outlet for my driven personality. So it's a good thing I found something exercise-wise. It's a good thing it wasn't some otherwise.
I have a question about that. If you would have discovered the bike before you discovered trail shoes, would you have been a biker?
Okay. Number one, the worst thing in the world you can do as a runner is run lots and lots of miles on pavement. I have no doubt that running on pavements for so many miles shortened my lifespan. I ran for 30 years, averaged over 3,000 miles a year for 30 years, and no injuries. And then I'm running along one day. Oh, that knee hurts. I thought, that's a torn meniscus. And sure enough, it was. And I'm sure it was running on pavement for so many miles, so many years, as well as running on a pavement that's has a little camber on it. And so pavement is hard on you. If I'd bike more and run less, I might still be running today and still have my original knee. But if I had to do over again, what would I do? I'd run more, wouldn't bike more. But yes, biking would save some years of life. Biking is good. It's easy. But it's not running. There's a difference. There's not the high that there is in running. There is a high in covering lots and lots of miles, which is why I like to do long races. But it's much more dangerous. It's not near as good for you as running is. Running is the best exercise you can do for the time invested. There are highs. And you would last longer. But my recommendation for runners is stay off the pavement. Limit the amount that you run on pavement. That's bad for you. It took me 3 months to recover from running the Appalachian Trail, 2,100 miles. It took me a year and a half to recover from running across America on pavement. Running across America on pavement. Plus, after I ran across America on pavement, I was never as fast. I lost some speed. It was just, I don't know. It was just not there. And the effort was, but the speed wasn't. And people who have raced across America, and they're never the same runners again.
I remember you saying that a couple of years ago, or it's been more than that, but yeah.
I tell you what I think is potentially bad for people today, and I'm glad it wasn't around when I was running, is the last man standing races. Mm-hmm. I think that's potentially really, really bad for you. Chris Roberts came and ran our Hellgate this weekend, and he was second at the World Championships, the one I just held a month or so ago. And I told him, boy, you don't need to run too many of those. He said, I know. I think those are bad for you. I think they're potentially real bad for you. But anyway.
Why? Why are they bad for you, David?
I think it's bad on your body in terms of when you run that long. Run across America, basically you run X number of hours and you rest. Doing last man standing, you don't rest. And some of them are held on pavement. Some are held on trails. That makes it a little bit easier. But man, you are digging the bottom to find out every ounce of energy you can or reason to go on and on and on and on. You're going to annihilate yourself in doing every last man standing race.
I was thinking of another event that wasn't around in your running days, these 200 milers. Do you have thoughts on those?
No, I hadn't really thought much about it, but I think those are probably not as bad, especially if you're on trail, as multi-days across the country. Now, what you did that is so popular now. Oh, I wish I'd been running then. UTMB.
Oh.
It is a huge deal now. I love to have done that. And you were the first American to really do that and do that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in 2003.
I know. That was the start, basically, wasn't it?
That was the first year. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. I'd like to have done that. Bad word? No way. I wouldn't have liked it. I didn't do it. I'm glad I did.
Hey, David, let's just pause for just one second. And, you know, Chrissy's been on this many, many times, but she's so humble. She really doesn't speak about herself.
She's tougher than nails.
Yeah. Tell us why Sissy Girl is tougher than nails. What makes her so special?
There's something in her. There's something in her. I mean, it's in the heart. It's in the head. I'll never forget the first year she came to Damascus, of MMT, our 50 miler that I directed for 25 years. And she ran so well. And I thought, wow. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. She is muscular, healthy looking, and I couldn't believe how well she ran. I was shocked. But then she did it again and again and again. She's really tough. She's got it. She's got it. She's in it. She's a competitor. She knows how to compete.
If she was a dog, what kind would she be?
I was going to say, are you afraid of her?
is she a pit bull?
I don't know, but she's close. She's close.
To a pit bull.
That's what we needed to come up with some other designations with respect to dogs and people's ability. Because pit bull, that is the philosophy. You know, a pit bull is a pit bull. That's just his nature, to bite and hold on.
Oh, I think I've got my dog, my little mini Australian shepherd. Just yeah, loves yeah. it. Whatever we're doing, I'm in. Whatever we're doing, let's go. Yeah, where's the group?
That's right.
Where's
that's
the group?
What you gotta be. That's what you got to be like.
So, David, you're human, and some things happen out there to all of us. And sometimes it feels like you're just running from one bad spot, maybe away from it, and then entering a new bad spot. It's kind of a bunch of bad spots strung together during the race. That happens. And there are great times where you're just floating along. But my question is this: when hard things happen to David Horton, how do you process that? What goes through your mind? How do you attack it and get through it?
Horton, I'm really hoping you've got a statement. You've got a saying that answers this.
It never always gets worse.
There it is.
I think of that on a regular basis. I think of that nearly every event I've ever participated in. It never always gets worse. Sometimes it does. But it never always. It's just unimaginable why it doesn't get worse. You could be in the pits. You can be puking and then puking blood. And I've puked blood on the Western States course. I've crap blood. When you do these things, you think it's going to get worse. And that's part of the reason why people don't try ultras, is they know how bad, and why they don't try marathons. They know how bad it feels 10 miles, so they're not going to do a marathon. They know how bad marathons are, so I'm not going to run any longer than that because it's got to hurt worse. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. In fact, a typical trail of 50K is much, much easier than running a marathon. Running a marathon on pavement is horribly hard. You're expected to run and push it the whole way, whereas running on trails, you can walk some. Mm-hmm. Even the best walk some. So it never always gets worse, and it doesn't. That's true in life, too. And I knew Sissy Girl was thinking that because I saw her reaction. And I think that often. You should think that often. Sooner or later, all of you, me included, all of us, are going to have a situation in our life that is just crushing. We feel like we can't go on, but we have to. We have to. And so we go on. How can I go on? I don't know. I think about other people. I think about myself. I think about letting people down. And that's what I feel like when I don't finish what I started, is I've let people down. Mm. And she's her own worst, hardest taskmaster. And I'm my own hardest taskmaster. I'm not motivated by other people. I'm motivated by myself.
Do you think you win the race during your training prep for the race, or do you win the race on race day?
Yes.
Good. That's the answer I was hoping for.
The will to win means nothing without the will to prepare. You got to pay your dues. There's no shortcut to fitness. You got to pay your dues. But then in a race, you've got to pay your dues too. Everyone hurts, and some people hurt more. How much pain are you willing to withstand? It's like the old thing. You have a candle. with a small opening at the top. You can put your hand over the top of that opening, that candle, and you can put it out if you want it bad enough. Every signal is telling you, that's burning, that hurts. Jerk the hand out. But someone bet you $100 you wouldn't put it out. Maybe you couldn't put it out. What if they bet you $1,000? What if they bet you $10,000? You could put it out if you want it bad enough. And so much of it is mental. How bad do you want to put out that light? Depends on what they bet on you. I'll never forget years and years ago, my uncle, when I was a little boy, he said, I bet you can't put a handful of snow in your hand and then you salt shaker and salt it and close it and hold it for a minute. Well, you know how you make ice cream. You put salt on ice and it makes things super cold. Well, I closed my hand. He said, 10 seconds. I thought, this is easy. He said, bet you a dollar you can't. I thought, whoa, we got it. And I held it for 10 seconds, 20 seconds. It's burning. 30 seconds. It's burning. It's unreal. And then finally he said, a minute. So I opened my hand and it just peeled all the skin off the palm of my hand.
Oh my gosh.
But I won the dollar.
You won a dollar?
I won the dollar. And so years ago, I knew that maybe I had something there, you know? And I've done a few other things.
Or you didn't. Or you didn't have something there.
You lost the skin off your hand.
How bad do you want it? I won the dollar.
We talked to David Horton, and part of the thing that we hear is the mind is so important. We hear about the sport. 90% of it is in your mind, and the other 10%, it's in your head. And that's why this next partner, Open, is so important to us.
Open is a mindfulness studio designed in a new way to practice this mind well-being that we just talked about. Open blends music, sound, breath, movement, and visuals to bring you to the present moment and really get you into your head and how that works.
And it doesn't matter where you are. If you have your phone or access to your PC, you can join a class.
It's so convenient, Don. There's not an excuse. I just did one. It only took 15 minutes. 15 minutes out of my day to practice mindfulness and build that brain muscle that I need.
And a library of over 300 plus breathe, meditate, and move classes.
You can try Open now for 30 days free by using the code TRN. Go to open-together.com/TRN and use the code TRN, and you can sign up and get that 30 days free.
You train your legs, you train your lungs, you train your heart. You got to train your mind too.
And now back to our discussion with David and Chrissy.
Hey, David, let's go to that last cycling event you did where you said at 1,900 miles you had to...
19 days, 2,100 miles.
And so you didn't complete it, correct?
Yep, that's correct. I wussed out.
Take us through the thought process. What happened? How did you wrestle that? And as tough as you are, how did you say, I'm done?
Well, I never got into the groove. That's one of the things. You got to get into a groove. And the long, long things, you got to get into the groove, whether it's 100 miles or 200 miles or 2,100 miles biking or 4,000 miles biking. You got to get in a groove so you can just go and go and go and go. I know when I was running across America as well as biking across America the first time, we could have went on indefinitely. If you'd fed us and gave us food and everything, we could have went on indefinitely. But I never got in the groove. In fact, to give you an idea, have you ever finished an ultra? When is the death march?
Mm-hmm.
Well, before I dropped out, I had a week in a row where I had the death march. 7 days in a row, it took all I had to finish each day.
Mm.
And finally, I just thought, I can't keep this up. I can't keep doing this. Mentally, I'm just not tough enough. And this summer, part of the problem was it was so windy out west. It was so hot out west. You know, there's lots of fires out west. Lots of stores have been closed. We had access to food and or water once, twice a day. So if I had better food, access to food and water, I could have done better. But other people had the same thing, situation I had. So I just wasn't tough enough. And plus, the hardest thing in the world for a runner in any race, basically, is when reality is different than expectations. Oh, it's so tough. And I was going to be slower finishing than I was 4 years ago. And I just couldn't deal with it. I mean, it just beat me down mentally. And finally, I just thought, I can't take anymore. I quit.
Can we talk about that word, get in the groove? What does that mean to you? What does that feel like to you, or what should it feel like to us to find the groove?
It's a pace. You feel like you could go on indefinitely at this pace. You just feel like I could go on. I could bike and bike. I could run and run and run. And that's a cool feeling. That's when you know you're in shape. And I felt like I was never in shape. I could never get in a groove. I could never cruise. When I did PCT, basically, I got in shape and I could cruise. And I'd suffer each day, but as long as I was, got food and water and a little sleep, I was fine. Then I could get up the next day and go. And you can go and go and go. But I just couldn't get there.
I think the coach in me can't help but like pipe in on this a little bit, like the different mentality that comes with training for these things. And I think, Horton, you have one that has served you for decades now. And we've just talked through a lot of the pit bull mentality, the how bad do you want it? And I work with a lot of clients on like different approaches, right? Like live to run another day, like make the decisions in each day that help you have this as like a long-term sustainable part of your life. So maybe biking a little more to have the longer longevity of running. Do you think about different approaches too for when you're helping other people into the sport, or do you coach under this realm of this is the way to do it?
Depends on who I'm working with. If it's someone who has some real talent, real drive, they want to be the best, then it's the pit bull thing. It's go on, suck it up, be tough. But the average person who I'm working with, it's like easing up on training. The vast majority of people start easing up 3 weeks ahead before a major race. And some people do it 3 weeks. Then some people do it 2 weeks. I used to do it 1 week. 1 week ahead, I'd start easing up. And I think people are sissies now from the standpoint of they ease up too soon. So it depends on who I'm working with.
I need about a 60-second clip of David Horton motivating me every day that I feel a little bit weak.
How bad do you want it, boy?
I need to hear that. It makes me
you
just want to
do it. That's the other thing. I think I'm much, much better now at teaching as well as helping runners from the standpoint of helping them develop their most, get their most out of themselves and believing in them and knowing talent when you see it. I had a girl who ran a 50K in my running class, 20 years old. And after she finished the 50K, this was in early November, I said, hey, girl, you should do Hellgate. What? That's really hard. I've just run a 50K. I can't do that. Yes, you can. I know you can. And we need people who know our ability and what we can do. And we need people who believe in us, who we trust. She ran the race. I wish I could show you the last three pictures taken by a professional photographer. Mm-hmm. They are the greatest pictures that I think I've ever seen. It shows her face as she's coming to the finish line. It's getting bigger and bigger. And there's the most joyous smile and face that I've ever seen in my life. From a little bit to more and more and more and more to more. It's just unreal. And then she goes down on the ground and is laughing and crying. You're so happy that you cry, a joyous cry. And she had a joyous cry. And that's so good to see. But we need people who believe in us, mm-hmm. who we can trust.
We met David back in 2014 when Don and I went out to Hard Rock. Don and I weren't running it, thank goodness. We met him out there. By the way, David is a 5-time finisher of Hard Rock.
Yes.
And won the first 2 years of its existence. So he knows the course really well. And he was out there as the first time we had met him. Of course, we knew who David was, but we were able to do a podcast recording with him. Kind of spur of the moment, and we'll link that in the show notes, won't we, Don?
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott. Do that.
But one of the things that I recall, David, you're a professor of exercise science, and you teach these young adults how to be healthy, and you have a running class. And I remember you telling me about people that these young adults that join your running class that you would never think should be in a running class or could be in a running class, and you take them under your wing and you coach them and you make them believe that they can do it. Tell us some stories about that and what joy you get from that.
I love it. It's like leeching off someone else, you know, helping them to achieve their goals gives you great joy. I love directing races as much now as I did 20 years ago. My first time I directed a race was 1983. So that's a long, long time. I've directed over 100 ultras, and it's just, I enjoy it as much now as I did then. I think more than likely I will direct ultras the rest of my life. I think more than likely I'll teach the rest of my life. I think more than likely, I know a professor came in the other day, and my door was open, but the light was off, and he came over and looked behind the desk to see if I died there. because Dr. Falwell, our founder of our school, they went in and found him like that. And so I think I'll die teaching or I'll die biking, one of the two. I don't think I'll ever retire. I'm a 43rd year here at Liberty. This is what I should do. This is who I am. Chris, you may have heard something like that before. So I should teach. I should direct races. I love directing races. I have given one up. I still direct two now, the 100K and a 50K.
David, can anyone do this?
Do what?
Run an ultra, a trail ultra.
Anyone can. Anyone can. It's just a question of how long. Anyone can run across America. Anyone can bike across America. It's just a question of how long. And a question of how bad do you want it? Biking, running across America is not super duper difficult. Racing across America is very difficult, and racing across America very well is super difficult. I averaged 9:15 per mile for the entire distance across America. That's counting all the time from start to finish of each day.
Wow, I don't think I could run a 9:15 mile with 1 mile on a track.
Sure.
It depends on how bad I want it, right, David?
You got it. I could run ultras now. I shouldn't. Since I got my new knee, I've run 2 50Ks without training a lick. And I probably run another 50K because if I run another 50K, I've run an ultra in, I don't know, 7 decades in a row. So I don't know, something like that.
So you put a bib on, get out to the start line. You haven't run a lick to prepare. Right. How did you manage that race? What was your plan as you roll that out? You probably didn't start too fast.
Nope. Run, walk. That's what most ultra runners do. Just ran and walk. So all of you could do it. You could do it. I could do it. I could go out right now and do a 100-mile race. It'd take a long, long time. And my knees, my legs would be really, really sore. You just don't get that impact biking that you do running. It'd be so sore. And I was. I was more sore after those 2 50Ks than probably any race I've ever run in my life. What did I do the day after running across America? I told two friends with me. I said, hey, let's get up. We were staying in a hotel in New York City. I said, hey, let's get up, make a loop around Central Park because I might not ever have a chance to do it again. And I haven't had a chance to do it again. We did 6 miles around the park.
Something else that one of the things I wrote down was contribution, and that you love, David, is trail work. And I think it's a good priority, and it's on my mind, front of mind. Chuckanut's 3 months away, and we've had some crazy rain and windstorms, and there's going to be much necessary needed trail work. If you get some people, yeah, call you, right? Just get people excited about trail work because you love it so much. Anytime I've come to help at one of your races, I get lumped into doing trail work, even if I'm racing. Sissy girl, get out here. We have to move these trees. So can you get some people excited about trail work and the importance of it?
Oh, I'm telling you what, there's nothing. I think it's probably more fun than running or biking is trail work. It's so neat. It's so cool. You feel like you've done something you should be doing. I mean, I used to be running up on the Appalachian Trail when I'd see people working on the trail. I felt so guilty. So finally, I started working on trails. And now I have a section of Appalachian Trail that I've maintained for 30 years. And we have 50 or 60 miles on the mountains that I've built with my students. And I just love trail work. It is so neat. It is so much fun. And I make it fun when we go out. and people have fun. And I don't have trouble getting people to get out to do trail work. It's fun. And I'm telling you what, if you've never done it, you should try it sometime. I see who Brian Robinson now, who is the first guy to do the Triple Crown, the AT, PCT, and CDT in 1 year. I see pictures all the time now of him doing trail work on the PCT. Oh, it makes me, I think, I wish I was out there so I could help do trail work on the PCT, because I love the PCT. But I do trail work here on the AT. But yeah, trail work is fun. Volunteer to do trail work sometime. You will enjoy. It is neat, and you'll feel good about yourself. You'll feel that, hey, I've done something I should have done all the time because I use the trails. Mm-hmm. So yes, trail work is fun.
That's like the added bonus too, is when you run back over a section that you helped build, and you yes. can feel that like sense of accomplishment again.
Yes.
Like it's a gift that keeps giving, right?
It is so neat to build a trail, then run on the trail or bike on the trail. So neat. And see other people use it. There was no trail there, and now there's a trail. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love building new trails, but I love also using my chainsaw. Anyway.
I think when I worked on the trails with you, you only had one. So now that you have
four. Yes.
David, you mentioned, I mean, you've run a lot of organized races, and then you've run these non-organized races, long, multi-day events. Which do you prefer?
Both, but long events I like better. I like covering territory, whether it's on a bike or on foot, low-key ultras, with no entry fee. I like those. Those are neat, especially trails. We used to do that quite a bit when I'd go out west in the summertime. We would do the volcano eruption tour
in terms of
running around the mountains. I mean, all the way around the mountains and training. And it's fun in groups. And that was fun. It was so neat. You need to go. If you haven't done it, you need to go and run around Mount Rainier Wonderland Trail. Oh, you need to go and run around Mount Hood. You need to go and run around, what's the other mountain? The one that blew up?
St. Helens.
Oh, Helens.
St. Helens. Yeah, you need to go around St. Helens. You need to go and do those mountains. They're cool. That's neat.
Yeah, we had I don't remember what year that was. There was probably six or seven of us that had planned to do the volcano tour. And the first night was, our first day was around Mount Hood, and one of our people did not make it off the trail. And so we were supposed to drive to the next mountain to be ready to run around the next one the next day. But because he didn't come off the trail, we were on search and rescue kind of mission all night. He finally came out in the morning. So we turned the volcano tour into the eruption tour and just made the best we could. I think we ran up Adams, and then we only got like partway around Helens, and we were all just kind of done from not sleeping, lots of concern and worry and crazy. We almost got stormed. We did get stormed off Adams. That's the first time I had to glissade without waterproof pants. These guys threw us down, Scott Jerk and David Horton, hushing us down the glissade chute on our like little running shorts. Oh man, some adventures I've had with you, Horton.
I know, but do you wish you hadn't done any of them?
They're all in there. Yep.
That's what we need to do more of, I think, is we don't have to have organized races. We can have adventures. Mm-hmm. An adventure is something that you don't know if it's going to work out right, but you have these ideas and these plans to cover a certain amount of area in a certain amount of time or certain conditions. I used to do the Smokies, which is 71 miles of the AT, but I would do it in January. And in January is the worst weather, and there's no road. There's one road crossing, and sometimes we'd have aid at that one road crossing, sometimes none. And sometimes we'd have a foot of snow and frigid temperatures. Guaranteed adventure. You don't know whether you're going to make it or not. And those were really rewarding, really cool.
David, if you had to put together a race team, one man, one woman, and it can come from any time between 1977 and today, who would you select to be on your team in their peak?
Wow.
One man.
One man, gosh. One woman.
I don't know. There's
so many good ones.
Depends on the length of the race, how much age you're getting. Chrissy's high up there. Sue Johnston is high up there. Scott Jurek is high up there. Brian Robinson is way up there. I'm not sure who else. That's a hard question. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's good. I probably wasn't fair to ask that question because there's so many good ones to choose from. Let me just ask this as a follow-up. Who do you think the toughest runner you've seen run? with just grit and determination and the pit bull itis?
That's good. You're asking questions that are really tough. I think I'd be up there. I don't have near the talent that lots of other people have.
Yeah. If you had a message to send down to the from the mountain to the valley to send for help, you would be a good candidate to carry that. Yeah, I would give it to David Horton because he's going to come back without an arm or a leg.
Before he would stop. Yeah.
He'd just get it done.
I want to know how your wife stands you, David.
Oh, Nancy. Nancy's the best. She's such a sweetheart.
How do you live with a pit bull?
Very carefully. This past summer, we celebrated our 50th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Congratulations to me, not to her. Condolences to her, I guess. I think, I know. She's a better wife than I am husband. I'd be hard to live with. I probably am hard to live with because these things tear you up. After I do the long, long things, the AT, the PCT, I have nightmares for a long time. I can't sleep well. I am not always in the best mood. You don't get over it in a day or 2 days or 3 days. It tears you up physically and mentally. This summer after dropping out, it took at least a month for me to recover mentally and physically, probably longer mentally. It was hard. I suffered hard. I worked hard.
Do you have a particular type of nightmare that accompanies that type of thing?
Yeah. Yes. I'm going uphill and I'm in sand in a headwind and I'm working as hard as I can and I'm barely moving. And you just, come on, come on. It's quicksand. You're moving. Got to move. Got to go. Got to make some time. Come on, move.
Wow.
It's horrible.
That's horrible. Fascinating.
Nightmares are horrible.
How do you recover mentally? You say it takes a while.
Yes.
What do you, are there things, do you have some strategies that you use to recover?
No.
Or is it just time?
It's bourbon? Time. It's time. No, I don't drink. I don't drink a drop. I don't drink any. I don't drink coffee either. I don't know. It just takes time. It's hard. Time heals lots of wounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And try to get back to regular life. I'm trying to recover now. And I've been in my office all day long yesterday and the day before and the day before. And I'd like to do nothing, but I've got projects I'm grading, papers I'm grading. I sort of hate this part.
David, you attack the endurance activities with amazing vigor. Do you do the rest of your life the same way? If you're going to put a fence in, do you attack it like a pit bull or how does your life look outside of sport?
Well, let's just say I always bite off more than I can chew when I go to do trail work. I always think this is how much I'm going to do. I can do this. I can do this. We can do this today. And so you can guess how we work.
Yeah.
We work, we have fun, but we work and, I can never do as much as I want to do with trail work and stuff. And boy, it bugs me. It's still bugging me right now because a runner told me that a tree fell right behind her on the trail this past weekend. And I asked her exactly where the location is. And it bugs me that I haven't got up there yet and cut it off the trail. And there's no race till a year from now, but it still bugs me. And what bugs me is when someone calls me and tells me there's a tree down on my section. I can't live life very good till I get that tree cut because that identifies with me. It's like you talk about my race that I was put on this past weekend. If you say you didn't have enough good food at the aid station, you're talking about me. The race is me. So I care about the races. I care about the races. I love the runners. I love directing the races. But then after the race, oh, my goodness. I can't tell you how many drugs I took Saturday night after finishing that. It worked a little bit, but it still takes several days to physically recover from it. Much less mentally, it takes longer than that.
David, we pick up a lot of characteristics from our parents or an uncle, maybe a sibling. Do you have anybody in your family that you learned from and watched and copied to be who you are right now?
What I learned from my childhood that I have no doubt that helps me with respect to the things I've done in life is the work ethic. Hard work. I grew up on a farm. We didn't have running water till I was 10 years of age. Didn't matter what you did at night on Friday night or Saturday night. If there's work to be done on Sunday, you got up, did it. It didn't matter. You just worked hard. So the work ethic is what I learned from my parents. And in particular, I think I learned the tough work ethic from my mother in terms of she was always doing stuff, always doing stuff. And she just couldn't stop. She couldn't sit down. I can sit down a little bit, especially if I read a good book. I love reading about other people accomplishing tough tasks, tough things. And I love for someone to tell me about a book where they've worked hard to accomplish their goals. Because hard work is, there's no shortcut to that. And my parents also taught me about education. They both graduated from high school, but that's it. Then I went on to college and got my doctorate. But that's nothing compared to doing some of this other stuff. That's just going to school, taking tests.
David, who inspires you?
Sissy girl. Nice. With respect to her attitude.
Yeah.
I like that. I've never seen or heard her say a bad word. I've never heard or seen or give someone a hard time. I have. I try not to. Brian Robinson does. Scott Jurek does. They impress me with what they've done and who they are. Warren Doyle, who's hiked the Appalachian Trail 17 times. Years ago, he had hiked it the fastest of anyone. He's got more people to hike the AT than anybody else.
Those are good lists. Yeah.
Those are great answers.
And you made the list, Chrissy. Nice.
I'm feeling very honored.
That spirit. She's got a spirit about her. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Horton.
First time I've seen you in years, sister girl.
No, we've chatted on the phone here and there, but it's been a minute.
And keep in mind this. You can tell your true friends by the standpoint of when you've been apart and you get back together, we were never apart. I mean, just like that. You're back as one. And Sissy Girl and I are.
You can always count on that for sure. Horton, what book are you reading right now? I need a good book.
I'm reading about that Nike book. Matt Hart. What's the title of it?
Oh, I just read it. The Salazar Story.
Yes. I'm just finishing that.
David, we are so happy to have you back on again. Scott is going to link our Hard Rock podcast recorded episode to these show notes. I ask you some hard questions. Who would you put on your team? Who inspired you? Who do you think's the toughest? And, you know, the right answer for many of us would be David Horton. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your enthusiasm, your encouragement, and the motivation that I need to get out there today to do a run, even though...
Exactly.
Even though...
Do it!
I'm going to do it.
I think... I'm going to take that clip. I'm going to make that my ringtone on my phone from now on, David. Is do it! Do it!
I often have people say, what would a Horton have done? What would he have said? Mm. I'll never forget. I'm starting on the last loop of Barkley, which is the most sacred territory you can ever get on. We were talking about Shackleton's book, Endurance. If you've never read that book, read that book. Have you read that, Sissy?
I've read that one, yep.
We was talking about that, and he said, what would Shackleton do? Well, what would Horton do? I don't know. I feel like such a wuss, such a weenie most of the time. And that doesn't mean right now. That means the last 30-something years I felt that way. So I guess I'm trying to prove that I still can do something. I don't know. Or was able to do something. I don't know.
Well, you're still doing it, and you're inspiring us to do it. We really appreciate you, and we look forward to watching your next and then making you part of our next, because we'll share. You'll see through us the things you've inspired as you scroll through the pages on the internet. There's a lot of people that have been influenced by you. So thank you very much, David Horton.
I was going to say, David, if you ever decide to ride your bike this direction, when you get to California, let us know. We'd love to go out and enjoy a trail with you.
I've got stories.
That's why I want to go with you, because I'm sure you have more stories than I have miles under my feet.
Probably. Probably.
He's got more bad miles than you have good miles and all miles. He's been through it. He knows what's going on.
I'm really thankful we were able to have you on and capture you on the Trail Runner Nation, Horton. Thanks for making time today.
Thank you, Sissy girl. I appreciate it. I enjoyed it. You got me going. You got me going. See, I'm excited. If I had to go sleep right now, no way. I couldn't do it.
No way.
There you go. It's like drinking 10 cups of coffee.
So go out and run.
Mas. Congratulations. You have made it to the end of the podcast. And this is a time when we give a heartfelt thanks to the people that support this podcast.
And we'd like to thank our Patreon members. We appreciate all your contributions. And if you would like to become a Patreon member, you can go to the Patreon page and search for Trail Runner Nation.
You can also go to our webpage and hit the support tab at the top of the screen. And you can also go to our webpage and hit the support button at the top of the page. We want to give a special shout out and thanks to Doug Crumley. He is a business Patreon supporter. Doug Crumley is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. He's like a good coach. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. You can find out more by going to DougCrumleyJr.com.
We'd like to thank our producer and editor, Ryan War.
Our social media expert, Yana Gibalova.
And we'd like to thank Kyle Richardson, who composed and performed our theme music.